Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen. Podcasting since 2005. You're listening to Gamertag Radio. With your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Here we go. Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 620. This is your host, Danny, and also the whole crew up in here. Co-host of the show, we have Pete in the house.
We back. What up?
What up? And also Paris.
What's going on? Excited to finally start talking about this stuff.
Yes, man. It's been a couple of weeks. You guys been keeping this secret, and a lot of people have been hitting us up.
Not just pastries.
Hey, man.
It's not just pastries.
It's not. What was the whole deal of you guys going to Paris out of all places?
You know what the funny thing was? I talked to my mom the other day, and where I was just telling her about Paris. I was like, "Oh, you would love Paris, and you can. There's all these boutiques and shops. You would love to just go there. You'd be shopping all day, right?" And she goes, "Well, according to all the pictures I saw online, all you do was eat food the whole time."
Yeah. Now, honestly, besides the pastries, how's the actual food over there? Because I've never eaten like French food.
Yo. What was the name of that one joint we went to that had all the lobster stuff? Oh, I can't even remember the name of it.
Les Pinches.
Oh my goodness.
Les Pinches.
The food is just amazing. Honestly, I don't know how that's not a nation of fat people. It's all the cigarettes. It's all the cigarettes and walking.
Yeah. It's food, absolutely food. I've been talking to various people. My wife, who's been to Paris a few times, she said that I asked her the exact same question. She's like, honestly, it's the cigarettes and all the walking that people do. And I was like, but all the carbs, everybody's walking around with loaves of bread.
Yeah.
No lie. Like 1 in 3 people walking around with a loaf of bread, just eating bread. I'm like, how are people not 400 pounds? How is the United States the most obese country in the world? How is France not? But
because we stopped smoking cigarettes and we don't walk nowhere. That's why.
Now, my question to you before I do the whole introduction and everything, were you guys close to like the main part of the city? Were you guys away?
Main Paris, because I mean we were basically able to get to all the main attractions within what, a good 40 minutes at max.
Yeah,
on the metro. Yeah,
the longest trip was probably when we all went to Sacre de Coeur, the monastery church place in Montmartre. Mm-hmm. But that was like the longest one, and that included the steps. That's probably another reason why there's hills and steps to everything. And that's probably another reason why the French are way skinnier than us.
I just remember one thing. There was the first picture I got to see you guys in Paris. You guys were standing in front of McDonald's out of all places. What's up with that?
Well, there's a whole story behind that too.
All right, so the story behind that is shout out to our friend Mike over at usgamer.net. You want to check him out, or if you want to hit him up on Twitter, make fun of the Subway Chaser, hit him up at Automatic Zen on Twitter. Mm-hmm. So we literally had just landed. Him and I were on the same flight out of Philly coming to Paris. And, you know, we had met him last year when we were lucky enough to go to London for the Ubisoft trip for Assassin's Creed. And so we get off, you know, we get off the plane, we get our luggage, and, you know, we get the car, we go back, we get to the hotel, and we go our separate ways, right? Like, I'm going to go, I went out, I was like, I still hadn't slept. It was like 17 hours of no sleep. And I'm like, you know, I'm just going to stay up because we're crossing time zones and I don't want to get jet lagged. And so I'm walking the city, and we come back, and Mike has already found a McDonald's, has scarfed down a Royale with cheese, and has passed not one, not two, but three French bakeries en route to go to a Subway and get cookies. So that's where the term the Subway Chaser comes in, because he's in Paris. Of all places, one of the most amazing food places you can go, right?
Yeah.
And he goes to McDonald's and chases down a Royale with cheese with Otis Spunkmeyer cookies from Subway. And who does that? Apparently only him. But
that is funny.
That's hilarious. That's ridiculous. And you know, all these stops on the infamous Riley Detroit stop on the metro. But yeah. Love France. Right. Highly recommend it to anybody who has not gone. And for those that have gone, I agree with you. It is amazing.
All right. Head over to gamertagradio.com or go to play.it/gamertag. And you also can listen to our past episodes there. Share it with your friends. And you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and other podcast directories.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
And now, let's talk about this trip. Well, we've been talking about the whole, Paris and everything, but let's talk about the official
yes
reason why you guys were there. Please tell us.
Okay. So Pete and I, and shout out to Ubisoft, just have to thank them. They paid for our trip over to Paris. We're over there for, 5-6 days, however long it was. And we went to the Ubisoft studio in Paris, France, to see Ghost Recon Wildlands. So kind of sets us up for you, because we can't give you all the information today, but for this week we're going to talk about the Bolivian landscape, and we have an interview we're going to play in a little bit with Benoit Martinez. He's the lead artist and the technical art director on Ghost Recon Wildlands, and we're just going to talk about, again, the Bolivian landscape, environment, everything that goes along with it. But we had a great time at the studio overall, though. I mean, we obviously there's going to be a part two and a part three that we'll talk about in our time there. But just being at the studio, getting a tour of that studio over there, and actually seeing the people that are making this game and having the chance to interact with them was an amazing experience. What did you think about it?
First, walking through the entire Ubisoft headquarters there in Paris was kind of awe-inspiring, seeing and talking with them and seeing how they've grown so quickly and so drastically in support of all of these new titles, and especially the Ghost Recon team, that they've had to literally buy the buildings next to them, break through walls and create passageways to accommodate the growth of the team in an effort to support Ghost Recon as a whole. And so getting to meet, you know, almost all of the members of the entire development team, just getting down to sit, you know, sitting down and getting to know them, not just from a gamer to a developer perspective, but, you know, having a chance to sit down and speak to them and just get to know them, I think was a phenomenal, you know, experience and opportunity. And like you said, you know, thumbs up, pat on the back, and a round of applause, and thank you to the good folks at Ubisoft for giving us this opportunity. I think it was fantastic, amazing.
Yeah, one of the things that I was talking with Paris after they got back from the trip, I was like, "Oh man, how was and everything?" And one of the things that Paris mentioned that they remember us because we met them during E3. We interviewed them and everything. We got to play the game over there. Remember that, Paris? That was like a pretty good, cool experience meeting with them. They were always been cool, man. But it's cool that they remember, especially Paris, because we sat down with one of the developers of the game during E3. So that was awesome, man.
You know? No, it was. And that was the funny thing, you know, because we're sitting down in the presentation. And just so people understand, this was actually a very unique opportunity that we got to participate in, because this wasn't your typical media, you know, like a media event where, you know, a bunch of people from the media come out, you know, they stick us in a corner, put a controller in our hand, we play the game for a few hours, interview someone, and then we leave. This was, we were at the studio all day, had full access to everyone that was making this game. We got to talk to them on the record, off the record. We went to dinner later that night, and it was a very casual experience. And to be perfectly honest with you, and I actually had a conversation with one of the developers during this, it was named Dominic, who, if you listen to our E3 interview, he's the person that we interviewed for Ghost Recon, the first interview we did. We actually did two. We did another one with the lead game designer as well later on. But point is, I was talking to him later on, and we were just casual. And just saying how this is kind of the preferred way to, like, if we could do every interview this way and have this kind of access to every game that we cover, it would be amazing, because the developers are at ease. They aren't on edge worrying constantly, are they going to like the game or are they going to trash us when they go home? It was more of a, hey, here's what we got. We hope you guys enjoy it. If you have questions, just talk to us. Mm-hmm. Just talk to us. Like I said, it was so casual and just, it's relaxing on both sides of the fence. And it was very small and intimate. It was only, what was total? Eight people, I think,
yeah,
total?
Maybe, yeah, eight or nine, yeah. Total.
Yeah, total. So yeah, it was an amazing experience. But like Danny said, you know, the guys that we got to talk to at E3, as soon as I sat down, you know, they're like, hey, I know you. I saw you at E3, which like completely threw me off, because I'm figuring, God, they've probably seen hundreds of people, you know, during that whole time at E3, but immediately that, you know, they remembered us and they really enjoyed the time that we spent with them talking about the game, which, you know, knock on wood, I hope played a factor in the fact that they invited us out to come see it again at the Paris studio. So, you know, going to the actual interview that we're going to talk about, I'll just say a couple key things about it. And you'll probably hear a few of these things again during the interview. This is all about the environment, and it's crazy that they went over to, do you remember exactly how long they went over there, Pete? They were over there.
They were there for, I want to say, 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like 2 terabytes of overall data. They sent four groups of people, over 15,000 photos. Mm-hmm. Taking, you know, notes. Like if you they have this amazing, like, Bible book of everything that, you know, concepts,
yeah,
and everything that they're doing in support of this game. And this is like a private book. This is not something that will be available for sale, you know, in the Ubi store, or will it? But like, it's the pictures that they took, the stories that they brought back, so that anybody and everybody on the team, if at any point in time, could always go back and reference the game, you know, the ecosystem, the city, the people. Like, there was pictures of like blades of grass in the middle of you know, the ground. There's, you know, large, you know, what looked like a salt mine expanseway, you know, villages in, you know, in the midst of construction and deconstruction. You know, it really gave you an opportunity to see what the entire, you know, locale was all about.
One thing about that, just to back up a second, like you're talking about, you see the various houses as things that are like in like mid construction,
right?
And they pointed out there's a reason for that. If you complete a house, if it's 100% complete in Bolivia, you're charged more taxes on it. So people build houses to a point where it's livable in, but they never finish it, because if they do, they're just slammed with taxes. And
right.
You know what I'm saying? Like Pete was saying, describing that book, which, God, I wish we could have had photos of it, or you guys could see what we saw, because it was like a life-changing event for these guys that went over there to capture all this environment footage for the game, and just to interact with the people in just the various stages. Like, you have basically the common people that are out there working in the cocoa fields. You know, obviously the drug trade is big in Bolivia, so that was a factor in it, which obviously was an inspiration for what we're going to get in the final game. But, you know, they were just saying how touched they were seeing not only just the people, but the environments, the wildlife in there. I mean, here's a crazy thing about Bolivia. The game itself, there's going to be 21 different regions in the game. There's going to be all types of dynamic weather. You know, there's over 120 settlements that they're going to have in this environment. It's over 800 kilometers worth of road, you know, that you can go anywhere you want at any time, you know, and the 11 different ecosystems in Bolivia. Like, you can literally go from the desert to the snow to the swamp. Yeah, it's crazy, you know, just everything that we got to see with that environment. And like I said, that, you know, Benoit, I'll talk about this more in the interview, but from what we got to see, because again, key thing, we did not get hands-on with this. This was, again, just a hey, come out to our studio, see the game we're making. We'll bring you out again later when you can actually get hands-on with it. So we didn't get to play the game. We got to hear from the people that made the game, tell us their stories, and then actually get to see this environment, you know, through a various sizzle reels and an actual demo that, you know, we'll talk about that stuff down the road. But just this environment itself, it was so impressive to see how they put all this together. And for people listening to this, and eventually when you get to play the game and see it for yourself, if you're an aspiring game designer, it's very impressive, because we even got a demo of how they layer all this together to create these environments. And then one thing that really stuck out to me was how the balance that they have of reproducing the real Bolivia plus having to put things in certain places because it's good for gameplay, which I thought was a very interesting thing, and how they have to balance all that out as well. So yeah, it was an absolute blast. And like I said, it was a very humbling and honoring experience to be able to go over there and see this game and them wanting our just 100% honest feedback. And, you know, over the next few months, you know, we'll talk about this game more and you guys will get to hear our experiences with it. But so far, just the chance to sit down with the game developers themselves in a non-pressure environment and understand how they make these games, why they made the decisions that they made, was just an amazing experience. And I really hope more publishers do this in the future. And it doesn't have to necessarily be us, but give other sites this opportunity to be able to do this. Because I think as you guys listen to this, or you watch a video on YouTube or read it, et cetera, from the various coverage that will come out, you'll understand that these guys dedicated a part of their lives to making this game. And whether it's a great game or it's a terrible game, we actually got to see the human element behind the game, which I think is a very important part of it.
And that's the thing, you know, a lot of the gamers, they really don't see or learn much about the behind the scenes of creating a game. Because most of the media outlets are just focused on, okay, how the game is and this and that. I love hearing stories of like, how was it when they went to Bolivia, or what was the inspiration on certain things that they worked on in the game? I love the behind the scenes stories, man, you know, and I love that part, man. You know, like when I went to Sweden for the Star Wars, you know, meeting with the DICE developers and everything, it was the same thing, man. Same exact concept. You know, it was a bigger group than what you guys had. But we sat down and got to meet the developers and asked them questions. And it wasn't even about the hands-on at all. It was more of just, here's the game, here's the behind the stories, and learn more about us working on the game. You know, so I love them. And I hope we get to see more of that from other companies too in the future, man.
No, absolutely. So one of the things that they mentioned and that really caught my ear and made me, you know, kind of like got the dog look where they rotate their head and look at you quizzically. There's mm-hmm. over 7 million trees, bushes, and rocks. And while that may sound trivial to, you know, any, you know, an aspiring game designer or someone who's, you know, just playing the game as a casual gamer, the amount of thought and concept that went into placement of trees and bushes and rocks, because of, like Paris was saying, there's 21 regions, there's 11 ecosystems. You can't just place 100 trees in a specific area. The thought pattern behind it is, okay, if we're going to put trees on maybe this particular mountaintop, where does the sun hit it? How does the water flow down? And as a result, how will that tree grow out? So they're adjusting the angles and axes of, you know, these individual trees, shrubs, and bushes as a direct result of the layout of the land, whether, you know, it's an incline, a decline, if it's in a valley, where's the water going to pool up? Like, there's so much that goes into just a simple placement of rocks and stones and trees, etc., that, you know, it was just mind blowing. And if anything, it gave me much more respect for the art behind what we play as gamers, and much more respect to those that have taken this as their craft, you know, as their career. And, you know, as Per said, if this game is a rousing success or if it's an amazing failure, my respect has gone up, you know, substantially as a result of having the opportunity to meet these people one-on-one and just talk to them about, you know, their experience in their life as devs.
I remember during E3 when we were sitting down, like they had like a little quick presentation about Ghost Recon. And one of the things they did mention that this is one of the biggest worlds they ever created from any other Ubisoft game. Right?
Yes, this is, in their words, this is the biggest open world action adventure ever made by Ubisoft.
Wow. So they took a very long time to work on this. A very, very long time. So, what, I mean, before we play the interview, what was like some of the inspirations you think that, because they came back different from traveling to, when they traveled once to Bolivia, right?
Yes.
So how was like, how that helped them to, design wise, to make it even better based on that, just that trip?
Well, it was like they were saying, it's the fact that Bolivia is such a unique place in of itself. The fact that the 11 ecosystems, Bolivia really has 11 ecosystems. You know what I mean? There's so many different environments in that country, not to mention obviously the inspiration of the drug trade that comes out of Bolivia and everything that goes along with it. They were able to craft a story and to craft this gameplay that you guys are going to be able to experience. I mean, matter of fact, I just announced the beta sign up, so people will really get to experience it here very soon. But, you know, that's what they took from it. And that, not, oh, we got a bunch of pictures online and we think we're going to create this fake world and call it Bolivia. It's like, no, they went to the real place. They experienced the real place and they used that as inspiration to create this world. Is it a one-for-one representation of Bolivia? Of course not. But it's as close as they could get, and then it'd still be able to make a video game that would be fun and exciting to play. So, you know, that was the balance that they had to capture in that. And from what we've seen so far, I mean, it's very impressive. And obviously, we talked about this at E3. It was the game at E3 that I really enjoyed, you know, getting hands-on time with it and playing and doing that co-op mission. So, you know, I'm excited. I'm excited to see more about it. Like I said, we got this interview. We have some more stuff that'll be coming down the road. So, it was a great trip. Very, very eye-opening.
All right, so we're going to play the interview right now. And by the way, guys, podcast exclusive. Shout out to Pete in Paris for making this happen. And also thanks to Ubisoft for the invitation. So we're going to play the interview right about now.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it. Back on the scene. This is Gamertag Radio.
This is a Gamertag Radio exclusive.
All right, so once again, this is Peter in Paris from Paris, France. We're here at the Ubisoft Paris office, and I'm here with Benoit Martinez.
Exactly, yeah.
Excellent, thank you. Can you tell us what you do here at Ubisoft?
I'm the lead artist and technical art director on Ghost Recon Wildlands.
What has it been like coming from an art director's perspective and seeing how the previous Tom Clancy games have always brought over, you know, that grandiose experience? How has that been like for you?
First of all, I was not art director. It's not exactly the title. The lead artist work with the art director to try to carry the vision of the art director. So my goal and my job as on a daily basis were more to work directly with the team to recreate the environment, to study all the references we gathered from Bolivia for the road trip we made there 4 years ago, and to establish a clear plan on how are we going to build such a massive open world from the ground to the little fine detail we are still adding at the moment. Yeah.
Now, let's talk about that trip to Bolivia. You know, you gave us a presentation earlier. So you broke up into four teams.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm just quickly going over my notes. There's thousands of kilometers that you guys covered when you were there, and over 15,000 photos and 15 hours of video.
Exactly.
Yeah, just talk about that. Had to have been almost not a life altering event, but something that you're always going to remember.
Yeah, it was kind of a fascinating trip to be able to be there. And I'm very happy to this industry and that at Ubisoft we moved this way to be able to document us that much, to gather so much reference. And going to Bolivia was a unique experience. And it was also very, very important for the project because we need to, before starting to recreate such a big open world, we need to understand how it works. We need to see it. We need to live in it. We need to breathe with the people. We need to meet the people, to talk with them, and to study everything, to take pictures of the trees, of the grass, of anything, any object, any door, any doorstep, any building. We need to understand how it's made, how they work, how they live, and study everything. So we cross all the country from north to south, east to west, gather references from the Red Lake at 5,000 meters of altitude when you can really feel that your eyes are going to pop out of your head. And we went into the jungle and we really try to, when we come back, to be truthful to all this amazing material we brought back. Yeah.
Now, just talking about Bolivia itself. So there's 11 different ecosystems that you're putting into this game.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're going to have 120 settlements and there's 21 regions that are going to be defined.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. It's because that's one of the key points to choosing Bolivia at the beginning, because it was an amazing opportunity for a Tom Clancy scenario, but also because this country and this land gave us so many opportunities in terms of diversity, in terms of vista, landscape, and we really wanted to give that to the player, to carry this vision and to carry the idea that the game is a journey for the player, and we want him to visit, to discover, to go through the jungle, to arid land, to go to the island, to the snow, and to go down to the lake and to cross the jungle and to travel through the death road to go from the altiplano to another part of the... So all of that was very important, and diversity and Bolivia was working really well together, yeah.
Speaking of diversity, you mentioned in the presentation about dynamic weather. Can you explain how that plays into the game?
Yeah, of course. We have a night and day cycle. We've showcased that, but we also started to showcase our weather system. So depending on your area, we have different conditions of the weather that could happen, from a very dry weather to the rain to the full storm with thunder and lightning and the mist according to the area. We have a dynamic fog, so across the lake and across the river, you have more dense fog in the morning. And we try to blend all those parameters together to have always very rich and vivid atmosphere around to really create a dynamic mood for the game. But it's also very, very important for the gameplay, because weather, changing weather day and night will of course alter the way you play the game. Maybe you want to wait for the night. Maybe you want to come back to this base at night because you think it might be easier, but you might be surprised or not. But you have a choice. You can experiment. You can try. And that's the key idea. Experiment, but experiment according to some parameter. You control some, but some are dynamic, and you have to go with it. Yeah.
Now, you gave us a demo of the actual world building that you're doing in this environment of Bolivia. Can you kind of talk about that layering system that you're going through?
The way we build the world is we try to be careful with each layer. And when I speak it to layer, is you want to avoid too many back and forth during the production of your game, because it's all about iterating, being able to create the content. So you want to start from the ground. We created the landscape and the raw landscape, so all the mountain and the valley and everything, but nothing on top of it. Then we were able to design all the lake and the rivers and everything. Then we added the vegetation, and at this point we had kind of a raw land. We could go everywhere, but nothing happened. But then we started to add the railways and the road and to connect the major key point in the world that we knew at this point were going to be the biggest town or the biggest location, the biggest landmark. And then we added more layers with other internal road network, smaller streams and river, smaller settlements and everything. And we end up with a really fine detail on top of that. But yeah, you need to be careful and you need to really polish every step.
That's now, other than the NPCs, this world is alive. There are animals and things going around in the environment, but they're not something that you can interact with, correct? They're just kind of just there.
You could shoot at them.
Well, I guess so.
But having a full wildlife was very important for us, because you don't build such an open world with forest and everything. You want it to live and to breathe. But as a ghost, wildlife is not really your focus. You're here for a mission. But it was the surprise and again the journey. If you go through a forest, you have an objective. You want to go through this forest to reach a base, and you're very careful about your surrounding and everything. But then it's behind a tree in the far distance, you can, in the morning mist, you can see a deer just being there. It gives a really nice picture and gives some kind of a breath to the game. Suddenly you can just stop and, whoa, interesting, was not expected, and then you go on. But yeah, it was important. This kind of detail was very, very important for us.
Absolutely. Were the design tools that you used for this game something that the studio developed specifically for this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we had to develop a lot of specific tools to be able to design all the landscape, all the territory, all the open world, so sculpt the terrain, help to create the river and the mountain, the vegetation and everything, create the road. So that's what we've been achieving in this game. I've never been done before this way or that big. So yeah, we had to develop a lot of specific tools to create the content and a lot of specific stuff for the AI and the actual gameplay. Yeah.
And just for people listening, to kind of give people the scale of the size of this world, there's over 800 kilometers worth of road.
Yes.
In this game as well.
Yeah.
It's just massive. But final question from me, and I asked you this when you were doing your demonstration, because you mentioned like when you're going into designing the world and world building, like you're talking about putting a rock in a particular place because that might be really good for gameplay. So I asked you about the balance between putting things in certain situations for the sake of gameplay versus trying to represent the true world that is Bolivia.
For us, there's two key elements in the game and that kind of drove how we create the world. There's the wild, where anything can happen, when you see the wildlife and when you have vast areas that contribute to this experience and to the journey. And there are some specifically level design area where the mission happen with the military base, the camp, some villages and everything. So we have a lot of care for everything, but where the mission is actually going to happen, where we expect something to happen, even if something can happen anywhere in the world, but in some places, yeah, we have to put some secret path. We have to put something for you to be able to climb over a fence in this specific area because it's going to help you and it's going to give you an advantage to enter the camp or stuff like that. So it's carefully designed everywhere, of course. Yeah.
Do we have a general idea as to how large the total gameplay area is?
If you consider that there's 11 biomes, just try to think about the game you already know, you played to, how many biomes do they have, how big they were, and you can try to imagine how it could be. But it's huge. It's really huge.
Wow, and I think at the beginning of the presentation, they mentioned this is the largest Ubisoft open world game that's ever been designed.
Largest action-adventure Ubisoft game. Yeah.
Well, congratulations on that, and I think I can speak for Paris, but I think we're highly anticipating this game coming March 7th
for
PC, PlayStation, and Xbox. So
exactly.
Once again, thank you very much for your
time.
Thank
you very much.
Back on the scene. This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
All right. So, Pete Paris, once again, thanks for recording that interview, man. Great questions and everything. Anything you want to say before we wrap it up about this whole interview? Anything else?
I'll say this. Stay tuned. Stay tuned in January, because the one we got coming in January, you know how you love to say podcast exclusive?
Yes.
We got something on there ain't nobody else got. I will 100% guarantee that. 100% guarantee that. So I'm excited for that. So I can't say what it is yet, but you guys are going to enjoy it. It'll be a special treat for sure. But I want to thank Benoit again, you know, for talk. Cause I mean, again, we also talked on the record with the microphone, but we talked to these guys off the record too. And like Pete brought up him, we went to his desk where he literally helps make the game, which again trips me out. Like, oh my God, this is where they make the game at. You know what I mean? Here's his desk, and here's how he manipulates the environment at his desk. And he pulled out that book just showing us all those photos from Bolivia that they used as inspiration to make this game. And then he actually showed, all right, here's how I apply trees to the environment. Here's how I layer on top of that and shape mountains and do all this stuff. And it's like, whoa. This is crazy, man. You know, I will never be smart enough to make a video game. So whenever I get to see these people actually do their craft and show their artistic talent that way, again, doesn't matter if the game's good or bad. That is talent. That is talent that you have to respect no matter what.
Let me ask you this, guys. Like, what is it that, why do you think it's so important for gamers to learn more about this, like the behind the scenes, the human side of the developers on working on any game?
Because again, it comes back to, no matter if you love the game or you hate the game or there's things about it you wish they could improve or whatever, you gotta understand, people put their blood, sweat, and tears into making these games. There's no half-assing when it comes to making a video game, especially in 2016. There's no way you can get away with that. There is just way too much money that are invested in these IPs, you know. And like I said, the conversations that we have with these guys off the record, at dinner and all that. Again, I won't say names or whatever, but I'm talking to one of the developers, and he was just telling me how nervous he is. To get this game to the public, because they put so much time and effort into making this game and they want it to be a success, obviously. And They just hope they did a good enough job to impress us, which is humbling in a way that here's a guy with way smarter than me that's doing something way cooler than I could ever imagine to do, and he's worried about what I think. That will always blow my mind.
And that was one of the first things I mentioned to them. When I got to meet them during E3, I'm like, man, I'm loving this game, man. This game is legit, you know? And seeing that smile, man, like, they're like, wow, okay, that's good, man. Because you know it is, man, E3, a lot of the media are very, like, sometimes they have those gotcha questions and everything, you know? They care, a lot of the media people, they just care about that part, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, man. It's good to hear that from you guys.
I'll even say this, and it's, look, when the game comes out, I'm going to give my honest opinion, but it does humanize it in a way that, like, one of the developers I got to talk to at the dinner we're having that night, you know, he's talking about his family. He's talking about how he moved his family to France. He's talking about the other games that he's worked on in the past. And it's like, wow, you know, this is a real person. This is his job. This is how he feeds his family. But he's also making a kick-ass video game that millions of people are probably going to enjoy at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like when you put it in that perspective, it's very humbling to know that I was in a position to be able to have that experience. That's what I take away from this.
And you, Pete?
No, I think he said it best. I honestly do. That's like he says, it humanizes. It gives us a better understanding of the thought process behind it. It's not just going in and just, you know, hitting the controller and playing a game. Now it gives us more of an appreciation of the entire process from beginning to end, that it's not just, oh, I'm just going to press a couple of buttons. Like you said, sitting there with Benoit and watching him cycle through, you know, bringing in fog into an environment. How does he do that? How does he play test, you know, the lunar cycle, which is, it's actually the weather is based on actual lunar cycles within this game environment. You know, it's so much more than, you know, we're just going to haphazardly throw, you know, railroad tracks here. No, it's like, how would railroad tracks be created as they traverse the terrain? It just, it gives you, you know, I hate to keep saying it, but such a better appreciation of the experience and the game we're playing and the people behind it. So, you know, again, shout out to the people at Ubisoft for giving us this amazing opportunity to experience this from a different perspective.
And I'll say this, and I'll probably get flack for this, but someone said on Twitter earlier,
here,
you know, I'm always filled with salt, so whatever. But to turn the page back onto our side of the fence, whereas it pisses me off so much that people get in the gaming journalism world, go to these events, they're invited to these events, and they go into it being so freaking entitled and so disrespectful to the studio or the PR people that are at these events. And they have just this laissez-faire, you know, attitude about playing the game. You know what I mean? Like I'll never forget, there was a guy that went to some Guitar Hero event, absolutely hated Guitar Hero, and his whole article was complaining about why did he have to be at this event. You know what I mean? Look, I'm a 43-year-old grumpy ass man from St. Petersburg, Florida. So I'll say it a million times, whether I love the game or I hate the game, I will always be respectful of having the opportunity to cover that game. And I think that's what's so lost in our industry right now, on the journalist side, on the blogger side, on the streamer side, is we have way too many of us that have this entitlement, and they're very disrespectful to the other people on the other side of the fence that put their blood, sweat, and tears into making these games. And again, it's not about you need to kiss the developer's ass and say it's the greatest game ever. You can respectfully say you don't like something, but you don't have to be disrespectful at the same time. And that's just the point I'm trying to get across. And I know I'm ranting. I'll probably get smacked on the hand for it, but whatever. But that's just how I feel. And the reason I say that again is Pete and I, and I don't want to speak for Pete, so I'm going to speak for myself. I feel very honored and very lucky that Ubisoft thought enough of this podcast to say, hey, Paris, we want you to go to Europe to go see this game and to give your honest opinion, because that was the word that I kept hearing the entire time. Just give us your honest opinion. Let us know what you think. You know, don't say it's the greatest game if it's not the greatest game. If you don't like it, say you don't like it. But if you love it, say you love it. And I think people who've been listening to this for the longest know that's how we are anyways. But that's the point, is respect the process. And the people that were at the event were with us. These were all people that respected the process. You know what I mean? But we've been we went to way too many events and been exposed to way too many people in this industry that don't respect that process. And this was just another reminder of why you should respect that process, especially getting, like I said, to get the human side of game and development versus just the, oh, it's in 4K and it runs at 60 frames per second. Because honestly, I couldn't even tell you what frame rate this game runs in, or are they going to do it in 4K? Because that's not the kind of questions I was asking, and I didn't care, you know? And neither should you until we get closer time to launch. Then we start worrying about that stuff. But for now, let's just tell the story of how these people are making this game and just, again, respect that process.
Awesome. Pete, you want to say anything else before we wrap it up?
I don't know. How do you follow a rant like that? I'm just going
to... I know, man.
Give me a Metro Pass and let me get off at Raleigh, Detroit. That's all I'm going to say.
Hey, let's go to... No, Pete, let's go to Blaise Sucre and get them croissants, bro. Oh, my God.
All right, man. All right, so head over to GamertagRadio.com or play.it/GamerTag and listen to our past episodes and share with your friends. And look, if you like this interview and also Paris rant and also Pete's story about McDonald's and Subway and so on, share with your friends and let people know about it. Post it everywhere. And it will help us to get the word around about GTR, man. So also, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, Stitch, and all the podcast directories.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, until next time, this was the last podcast exclusive of 2016.
This is a Gamertag Radio exclusive.
That's a good one, guys. Pretty good one. And hopefully we're going to wrap it up next week with our final episode, Game of the Year. Mm-hmm. And I hope you guys have your list ready.
I've been working on it for a couple of weeks already. So I have some that might surprise you. I have some that probably won't. You'll probably be like, yeah, of course. And there might even be some omissions that you'll be like, wow.
Oh, hey, I have some surprises. Hey, I have some surprises.
I can say this. Because especially because I know we got some fan mail was trying to rip me saying I hate Xbox, but I have an Xbox game in my top five. How about those apples?
Ooh,
matter of fact, I got two Xbox games in my top five. How about that?
Ooh, spoilers.
Emerald. I'm just bleeding Emerald over here. Cut me, Mick.
You're turning green. You're turning green, Paris. I see it from here. Oh my God. All right. We're going to be out. Until next time. Peace.
Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.